It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the program, we'll talk about Attorney General Eric Holder's recent comments about the U.S. Department of Justice getting involved in the legal fight over Wisconsin's voter ID law.
But first, fashion photographer Rick Guadagni was photographing what were considered the world's most attractive people when an incident completely changed his way of looking at beauty. He's been working for the past 15 years to change commonly held attitudes toward the way we look and to raise awareness of the social and psychological experiences of people with genetic, physical, and cognitive differences.
Rick Guadagni joins us now from New York. He's an award-winning former fashion photographer, and he's the founder and director of Positive Exposure. That's an arts, education, and advocacy organization that works with individuals who live with genetic and other conditions. Rick, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, great. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
We mentioned the moment. Tell us about the pivotal moment when you decided to shift to who you photograph and what you did with your life.
Oh, it's actually after a big casting, actually, seeing lots of models for a certain shoot that I was about to do, and I was leaving my studio, which is here in New York City, and walking down Park Avenue. I spotted a young woman waiting for the bus at the corner at Park and 20th Street, and she didn't have pigmentation in her hair, her skin, or her eyes. She had a genetic condition called albinism, or the common term was albino that I knew at that point. And she was so beautiful, and yet I realized that she had never been included in that beauty standard. And she was so gorgeous. But when I went to look through medical textbooks to get any information I could about this genetic condition, to see images of this gorgeous kid and her friends with the same condition, I only found really horrible, stark medical-type photographs of kids up against walls in doctor's offices with those black bars across their eyes, looking like diseases, looking like medical diagnoses. They were not people. I didn't see one photograph of this gorgeous kid, there were just all these scary images of despair.
And this started you thinking, I gather, about what we mean by beauty when we think about it, when we look at it.
Sure. Well, prior to that, I was, as a fashion photographer, working here in New York and living in Paris and working in Milan, and just always being told who was beautiful. And I was constantly told who the model of the moment was, and that would change each season. And as a fashion photographer, I would follow all that direction. But, as an artist, though, I didn't see beauty just on covers of magazines. I saw beauty everywhere. So seeing this girl was so exciting, to see beauty outside of the industry standards or the parameters of the beauty standard.
So you decided to find new subjects for photographs.
Yes.
What did you want to accomplish?
Well, I wanted to see beauty outside of the parameters of the beauty standard. I wanted the beauty industry to see beauty not existing just on the covers of those magazines, to see beauty in someone with albinism, to see beauty in diversity, to see beauty in human difference. And so when I went to research and to find people to photograph, I contacted an organization which was called NOAA, the National Organization for Albinism and Hypopigmentation. It's a support group for people living with this condition and their families. And I called them saying, hey, I'm a fashion photographer. Let's show the world the beauty of albinism. This is going to be amazing. This is going to be so much fun. And at first they told me to go away. They made it very clear to me about their fear of exploitation.
Oh, yeah,
and every
yeah.
time a magazine article came out about a person with albinism, it was always about a victim, always negative, sensational, exploitative. And I couldn't agree more, because that's all I could find was all this negative, negative imagery in medical and encyclopedias, and everywhere that I looked, I would only find those negative images. So at first they said no, but I said, well, let's kind of form a non-traditional partnership, a fashion photographer, a genetic support group, and together we can create something really magnificent in seeing the beauty in albinism, the beauty in human diversity, and that's how we partnered.
As a photographer, how did you approach this in a way saying, okay, I don't want to be clinical, like the medical textbooks you mentioned. I don't want to be exploitative, like the media coverage I've seen. How do you do that? How do you walk that line?
Well, as a fashion photographer or as an artist, my whole interest, my whole focus has always been on beauty and creating an opportunity to see beauty just to see beauty, to create an environment where beauty can really shine and beauty exists in an incredible, almost tangible way. So from photographing Cindy Crawford to photographing the first person with albinism, nothing changed. I was exactly the same photographer. It was allowing that moment, that environment to kind of accept and celebrate that beauty. And so the first person that I photographed walked into my studio completely hunched over, head down, no eye contact, because of the teasing and the abuse because of her difference, which caught me completely off guard because I was so excited to photograph albinism and to show the world the beauty in albinism. And in walks this beautiful girl who had zero self-esteem because of the abuse she experienced every single day. So that changed so many things for me right then and there. And I thought, oh, man, how am I going to photograph this kid? She's so vulnerable. But just the day before, I had photographed a Revlon shoot with Cindy Crawford on the same set in my studio. And I thought, you know, out of respect for this gorgeous kid, I'm going to photograph her like I did yesterday with Cindy or any other model. The fan went on, the music went on, and I picked up a mirror and I just held it up to her. And I said, Christina, look at yourself. You're magnificent. And she saw it. And it, her, she broke, her hands went on her hips, her head went in the air, and this smile came across her face that lit up all of New York City. It was amazing. And that's how this really started, to really, not only to see beauty, but it created a slogan or a motto that everything that we do here at Positive Exposure and that I live by is that change how you see how you change. It just creates all these opportunities for people to see themselves, to see that reflection of all of us, and to see what is reflected back at us, all those great parts, and to celebrate that and to see beauty in that.
How do we recalibrate our mind to change our definition of beauty, to see it in people we usually wouldn't see it in, and maybe in ourselves, if we're one of your subjects here?
Well, see, so often when you see somebody walking down the street that has a physical difference or has some sort of a difference, and they're walking toward you, you either, as the public, as anybody on the street, they're not having any information about that difference, either you stare or you look away. Well, that looking away is actually even more painful at times than the actual stares for an individual living with a difference. So what I do through photography and using the arts is to create opportunities for the public to steady their gaze long enough to see beauty in that difference. And then once you see that, then you see around that to what we share, which is humanity. And it's creating these opportunities to kind of change the way that you see beauty. Change how you see how you change. You see that once you see this beauty in difference, you're overwhelmed by it, and you stay enlightened, and you start seeing beauty in other places. And this is and this is through Positive Exposure, but this is also part of a huge human movement. No one wants to be seen as a disease or diagnosis. Everyone wants to be seen as a human being. And what I do as a former fashion photographer, but as an artist, to really show the beauty in that diversity.
You started with people with the condition of albinism.
Yes,
you didn't
right.
stop there, though. Where did you go next?
Well, I the first images were in Life magazine several years ago, and it was a really great honor. It was a cover story. It was fantastic. And I started traveling around the world photographing people with this condition, but I also received an award, the Art of Reporting Award, from an organization called the Genetic Alliance. And the Genetic Alliance is a coalition of all the genetic support groups worldwide, and they're based in D.C. It's an amazing organization. It's providing support for the actual genetic support groups themselves and family support groups themselves. And this award it was just wonderful. It was really great. It was my first big accolade from this program or project. And the director at the time said to me, I'm looking at these beautiful photographs of people with albinism from around the world. But, you know, actually, you know, there's a universal message here. This is a message about celebrating all differences. Would you come to some of our family conferences and meet some of our gorgeous kids that don't have albinism but have other genetic conditions, that they too can celebrate their difference and have their families see the beauty in their gorgeous kids. So I went to my first conference, which was in San Antonio, which is for kids and adults living with a chromosome 18 anomaly. When you have an anomaly on your 18th chromosome, but not knowing what that was, you know, I ran back to those medical textbooks and found horrible images of kids with cleft palates and kids with feeding tubes and trachs and kids with mobility issues. And they were horrible images. Again, I'm thinking, you know, albinism was so easy, but this is going to be tough. But I committed, and I went, and I walked into this auditorium where all these kids and young adults were being entertained. And I opened the door, and I was surrounded. I had these horrible images burned in my head, by the way. But I walked into this room and was instantly surrounded by kids screaming with laughter, They were kids. First, if there were those giggles in those photographs, there were kids with clefts and palates and kids with trachs and feeding tubes and mobility issues. But first and foremost, they were huge. They were kids, and they were amazing. And I just fell in love with them all, and I started going. I go back to this conference constantly. But it was actually after arriving back to New York City after that experience at the Chromosome 18 conference, I was approached by the National Human Genome Research Institute, the National Institute of Health, to create an exhibition commemorating the People's Genome Celebration that was going to premiere at the Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. And I just, you know, that was to show albinism worldwide, to show diversity within the heterogeneity within albinism or that diagnosis, and to show albinism worldwide in Fiji and Africa and Asia and Malaysia. And I said, this is great, but, you know, I just came back from this amazing conference in San Antonio, this Chromosome 18 Registry and Research Society, where I met these beautiful kids, very stark contrast to the images in medical textbooks. These kids, look at these photographs. I said, let's invite other genetic support groups to participate in this exhibition, and sure enough, everybody wanted to be part of it. So then I started working with, we created that exhibition that launched, and then continued to work with all these great organizations, and now I find myself, you know, this former fashion photographer doing grand rounds in hospitals and speaking to medical students at medical schools around the world, and creating exhibitions and as the public exhibitions that really kind of create opportunities for the public to see beauty in difference, to not see a disease, not see a diagnosis, but a human being. And that's also the same in medical school. We have so many programs like the FRAME Project, which is Faces Redefining the Art of Medical Education, creating opportunities for the individuals themselves to explain the basic characteristics of their particular condition to healthcare providers in training. PEARLS Project, Kids Positive Exposures Ambassadors, Real Life Stories, kids blogging about their lives and their experiences, sharing and networking their everyday experiences, not just talking about their difference, but starting this dialogue, this conversation every day. Every day is an opportunity to talk about diversity, to really talk about and have new understandings each day about what diversity really does and truly means.
And Rick, we'll get into those programs a bit more in a moment. So we'll continue our conversation about reframing beauty with photographer Rick Guidotti in just a moment.
And we'd love to hear from you. Do the media images that you see, do you think that they we absorb that we create an unrealistic and even unhealthy view of what's beautiful? How has society's notions of attractiveness affected your life and those close to you? Do you have a genetic or other condition that makes people look at you as different? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or post on our Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about changing our idea of what beauty is. We've got a former fashion photographer, Rick Guidotti. He's now actively working to highlight the psychological, the societal experiences of people living with genetic anomalies and trying to photograph them as humans, not diseases, not people who are different.
What's your reaction? What questions do you have? Do you have a genetic or other condition that makes people, that has made people look at you as different? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org.
Before we go to the phones, Rick, I want to ask, you're there maybe with a family and a kid. You've done these pictures. They're looking at the pictures, maybe for the first time seeing pictures outside of that clinical setting you were talking about earlier. What kind of reactions have you heard from the families?
It's extraordinary. It happens every time. It's having a mom have her child seen publicly the way she sees him. Not the way everybody else sees him, but the way that she sees him. And it's so celebratory. It's so powerful. It's so inspiring. And empowering to really see beauty in that difference and allow a family or an individual to look at their reflection and see what that reflection has and is holding, and it's something that's good and something that's beautiful. Different maybe, and that's okay.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got April on the line in New Glarus. April, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm curious and like, who defines normal and who defines beautiful? And, you know, why is this okay in our society that, you know, these beautiful skinny actresses are, you know, hairless no facial hair and super thin. And, you know, I definitely have facial hair and people, I just wear it. And same thing with my armpits and my legs. And why are we so scared of like this thing that is part of us? When did this start becoming normal? So just something I think about often in kids, I get a lot of reaction from kids, you know, they stare at me and they're like, oh, that woman has, you know, hair on her lip and on her chin. But I know I'm beautiful and I have lots of people that love me and
gorgeous.
Think I'm brave and beautiful too. So
April, thanks for the call. Rick, your thoughts.
My thoughts on that is, you know, first of all, I think why that size one model on the cover of all these magazines is actually spent hours and hours in hair and makeup and then retouched for 3 or 4 days, where that person doesn't really even look like that photograph. It's an industry that's selling product. It's an industry. It's it's a powerful industry that's selling product and that dream, and somehow we believe that that is the dream, and it's about time that I believe that we all think for ourselves and creating exhibitions through like positive exposure, but also listening to other April just now, and listening to the people that are in power with not, you know, bucking that system and saying, you know, I don't really want to fit into those the parameters of that beauty standard. I'm going to create my own, and that's what this is about. It's about being able to accept difference and see beauty in that, and not that kind of dictated beauty that we find constantly shoved at us on every coffee table, every magazine stand.
Thanks for the call, April. We'll go to Sandy now in Rhinelander. Sandy, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. There are many members of my family that have piebaldism, which sure. is partial albinism.
Sure.
And so, you know, our hair, like the forelock of our hair is snow white. And then the rest of our hair, you know, it could be blonde or brown or black. And then, you know, there are parts of our skin that have no pigments. So those patches are completely white. They never tan or they're always just white. And so especially in the summer when the other parts of the skin tan, it's very noticeable.
Sure. Comes even more contrast, sure.
Yeah. And, you know, as a child in particular, it was very difficult because kids are mean. They get teased
sure,
a lot.
Sure.
And then there was always, you know, people would say, what happened to you? And it's like, nothing happened to me. I just
sure.
don't have pigment in parts
sure.
of my
And Sandy,
skin.
Now head held high?
Yeah, as an adult, you know, my mom in particular, even though it comes from my dad's side, my mom was really supportive and reaffirming that there is nothing else wrong with you. You can walk, you can run, you can, you know, you're fine and you're just as good as everyone else. And so as an adult, especially, I guess, in the era where everybody dyes their hair and people, you know, found it to be very striking and, you know, lovely.
Sandy, I want to jump in because we're just about out of time, and I want to give Rick a chance to respond. Do you hope more, you know, moms like Sandy's are getting this message and communicating that to their kids, whatever the condition we're talking about?
Absolutely, without question. And the idea is that to create the tools that are needed for advocacy, for self-advocacy, for the parent themselves to help that child see beauty in their difference, but also to create other opportunities for the individual who is reacting negatively to someone who has a difference. Give them also the tools that they need, the tools to also see beyond what they're just told. Oh, that's different. I have to look away. That's awful. It's too different. I am not supposed to accept that. I'm supposed to only accept this. And so we have to create opportunities and lots of tools that we can place in the hands of our individuals living with difference, but also to our public and the broader public as well, to give them opportunities to accept the diversity, to accept and embrace diversity, to create a more inclusive society where all differences are celebrated.
You know, Rick, this just popped into my head. Is the next step getting the people you're taking pictures of getting cameras in their hands, taking pictures, selfies, and pictures of each
other.
Oh,
this that happens, and that's always happening. We're always promoting that and promoting, you know, especially with the, you know, we have Facebook, and it's about, again, creating opportunities to see that people can actually see and be more comfortable with someone living with a difference. So, yes, absolutely, putting cameras in people's hands, taking more photographs, people feeling empowered to say, you know, not hiding in the shadows, but standing up and be on the table, out in public, head held high, hair blowing in the wind, proud of your differences, absolutely proud of your differences.
Is this making an impact? Are you seeing a change in the people you talk to?
Constantly. Constantly. And not only have I seen the impact in individuals themselves, but in families, in communities, in schools, in healthcare practices. It goes across the board.
Amazing. Rick, thank you so much for joining us. Hope we can talk to you again sometime.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
We've been talking to Rick Guidotti. He's an award-winning former fashion photographer. He's the founder of Positive Exposure. That's an arts, education, and advocacy organization that changes our image of beauty. It works with individuals who live with genetic and other observable differences.